Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Today, I want us to talk about what it means to restore each other. And I'll tell you on the front end, this isn't necessarily the easiest talk that I get to have. As I was looking back into the Word, I was looking at a number of cases, times and places, where you see breaks in relationships, and then you see how it is that those relationships are either restored or not restored. Restoration is thematically connected all the way through the Word of God. You see brokenness after you see God's good creation in Genesis 1 and 2. You see Him create a man and woman, present them to each other. You see family, and it doesn't take terribly long after that before you see mistakes happening. Now, the question isn't, are we all making mistakes? Because I think in humility, we all have to say, yes, we do. And some of them are, if you start to kind of scale some things, some of our mistakes are a little bit worse than others, at least in the sense of maybe the potential relational impact that those mistakes can have. But what we all know is that we all make them. The question then becomes, how do we address the mistakes that we make? What is it that is my job, my responsibility, my portion, so to speak, given the situation that we find ourselves in? And it drew me back to Genesis chapter 14. And I just want to talk you through this story, and then we'll get over into Galatians chapter 6. But in Genesis chapter 14, you see this guy named Abram. And Abram has to make a pretty difficult move because he was put in a pretty difficult situation. He has a nephew, and his nephew's name is Lot. And Lot had made his decision that he was going to move his tents and all of his stuff towards Sodom. And the reason that he wanted to move everything towards Sodom is because, well, frankly, the grazing was better there. And so, practically speaking, he thought, this makes a lot of sense. And so off he goes toward Sodom. Now, that one choice sent Lot on a downward spiral from which he never recovered. What we find is he moves near to Sodom. And then by Genesis chapter 14, verse 12, we find that Lot has moved into the city. So it's one thing to say, hey, a lot of grazing over there near Sodom, but then he moves into the city where he already knows in advance there are extraordinary evils that are being perpetuated among the people. Now, the kings from the east, they wanted the region because it was a great trade route. So location really matters. So if you can take over Sodom, you own a lot of trade. And so what they did is they came in and they defeated Sodom. And the king fled. And the people of Sodom and their stuff were all taken captive. The people and their stuff were all taken captive. And that includes, you guessed it, Lot. Man, like I said, it was a simple move based on grazing patterns that turned into a nightmare for him. Now, there was an escapee, and the escapee jets out. He comes over, and he finds Abram. And so he tells Abram of the situation. He says, hey, man, things have gone sideways over there where Lot is at. And so what Abram does is he rises up. He stages. He's like Chuck Norris in Delta Force. He stages a surprise attack. He does it at night. He recovers everything that had been taken, including Lot and all of his possessions. Aren't you thankful for a guy like Abram? And on his return from battle, Abram runs into two people. One is a guy named Melchizedek. Some of you have probably heard of him. He is the king of Salem. He's also known as like a high priest. But he also runs into the king of Sodom. And the king of Sodom encouraged him, hey, you came in, you put this night raid together, you put a whooping on everybody, you got a lot of goodies at your disposal. How about you keep those? How about you keep those? And Abram looks and he says, no, I'm not going to do that. Now, there are a couple of things that I want you to think about in the story that we have so far in Genesis chapter 14. And here's one. Abram had good reasons on the front end not to go help Lot. Let's just be honest with ourselves. That guy had some good reasons. I'm just going to give you a couple. Here's one. Lot's problem was Lot's fault. Right? I mean, Lot's problem was Lot's fault. And what he could have said is something like this. Well, man reaps what he sows. Right? I mean, you liked the grazing. You didn't have to go into the city, even if you liked the grazing. But nope, there you went. And so you reap what you sow. And so the escapee could have come to Abram, and Abram could have responded that way. It's not what he did, but he could have. And all of us would sit there and say, you know what? And that response, well, it makes a little bit of sense, doesn't it? But it wasn't how he handled it. Here's another reason to not go if you're Abram. I mean, why in the world would I go after multiple powerful kings who have done nothing to me personally? And after all, my life is pretty good right now. I mean, I have a good flow to things, and I don't want to disrupt that. Now, those are two good reasons on the face of it, what I'll call good, that Abram could have said, man, I hear you. I even hate it for Lot, so I'm going to hang here. But it wasn't what he did. Instead, Chuck Norris style, he goes in and he retrieves him. So you see the other side, because the reason to go is because he had a brother in bondage. And that's why he went. He had a brother that was in bondage, that was held captive. I mean, after all, Lot was a believer. He had been taken captive. He's also family. Remember, he's a nephew. But more to the point, something that we see from Genesis 14, and I'm going to show you from Galatians chapter 6. More to the point, when a believer is caught in a sin or the effects of a sin, we need to get to work on restoration. That is something that if anybody ever came to Woodridge or any church in the world, what I would hope that they would say is they are about the business of restoration. So that's what leads us to Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. And here's the way that it reads. Paul writes to the church at Galatia, and he says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Now, this is a very rich verse for a number of reasons. One is because he uses the word restore. He uses the word restore. Now, the word restore just means to mend what has been broken, to put it back together. It's like a bone that's been broken. You restore it, and so it is connected again. And Paul uses that image and that language to see there's something that has been broken and it's got to be mended. Another way that you see it used in Scripture going into Mark's gospel is you see fishermen's nets that have been ripped from the work and you mend it. You restore what has been torn and what has been broken. But we also see something here. He calls them brothers and sisters. He doesn't call them all you pagans. He says brothers and sisters, which means the break that's been happening has been between believers in the church, brothers and sisters. So we know that he's talking about them. Something has gotten torn in their lives together. And when you have a tear in the life of the church, you have an impact in the effectiveness of the church. So when you go to church, like I said, one of the things that you should find is that there are people that are being restored. And what that means is humility. Sometimes you just got to say, I've caused some problems here. Don't try to justify yourself, but just say it, own it. And people that are not a part of the church might see that we handle ourselves a little bit of a different way. We handle ourselves in gentleness and humility with respect and consideration for each other. I mean, after all, restoration is needed because these folks are stuck in a sin that they cannot get released from. So when you first read it, and it says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, I don't know about you, but I remember looking at this the first time, you go, caught, like, gotcha. But that's not what this means. It means something different. It means almost like an animal that's stuck in a trap and they don't know how to get out. They're caught in their situation. Martin Luther was giving commentary on this passage of Scripture, and he said this. He said, if we carefully weigh the words of the apostle, we perceive that he does not speak of doctrinal faults and errors, but of much lesser faults by which a person is overtaken through the weakness of his flesh. This explains why the apostle chooses the softer term fault, to minimize the offense still more, as if he meant to excuse it altogether and to take the whole blame away from the person who has committed the fault. He speaks of himself as having been overtaken, seduced by the devil and the flesh. And what he said was, when he came to understand that, it even saved his life because he saw everything very differently. That's why he says that they're caught like an animal in a trap. Now, maybe the animal is a lot like Lot. There's good grazing over there. And so off they go. And as they get in, bang, trap closes down on them. They're like, whoa, that is not what I saw coming. And when they're there, then they say, I don't know how to get out. What should the church do in response? Well, we have a couple possibilities. One is we could respond the way that I said that Abram could have responded to Lot, right? Well, you reap what you sow. So that's one possibility. I'm going to suggest something different today. Because in this, he's not talking about, well, they got trapped by some preference. He's saying they got trapped by sin. It ensnared them, and it's got them. It's got them. And spiritually, this means that you need the right person to assist you with the problem that you've got. The way that Paul said it in Galatians 6:1, you who are spiritual, restore such a one, or restore such a brother, or restore such a sister. David Guzik said like this. He says, when you talk about restoring such a one, notice the language, they've been overtaken, they've been defeated, they've been beaten. The overtaken ones need to be restored. They're not to be ignored. That is one possibility, though, right? Let's just act like there's no problem here. They're not to be ignored. They're not to be excused. They're not to be destroyed. The goal is always restoration. It is always restoration. When you're confronting someone, or if someone is confronting you, if the goal of you or the one confronting you is not restoration, it has started in the wrong way. If it's judgment for the sake of judgment, or you're just mad and you want to vent your anger, you have started in the wrong space. You have to go back and get the goal right before you proceed. You don't ignore them. You don't excuse them. You don't destroy them. You work to restore them. And that's difficult. That's tough, especially when you're on the receiving end of what the other person is trapped in. And you know what I'm talking about. People make mistakes that have an impact on family, and relationships, and friends. You could think about a person that is caught up in a drug addiction, and they're not just stealing from their parents, they're literally stealing TVs off the walls so that they can sell them so they can get their next hit. What we cannot say is that sin only affects you. It does, but it affects more than you. And when you're on the receiving end of it. Recently, Wendy and I were on an airboat, and we were going through the Everglades. It's a lot of fun, by the way. But we're going through the Everglades, and we're talking to the boat captain. And as we were passing by, he was like, oh, look up over here. And he was talking about this bird that was kind of up on a perch. And so he was saying, now, here's the interesting thing about this bird. It's a bird. He said, this bird can actually eat small gators. All right, now, I'll tell you, that one kind of blew me away. I did not know that. But here was the other thing. He said, yeah, like a year ago, he said, we were out here, and kind of chaos broke out here in the Everglades. And here's what had happened. Now, that bird, that beak, is basically like a spear. Bang! It just hits, and it traps what it's trying to catch. And then it has snacks, right? Well, a bird had gotten caught up. It was trapped. And you have this person that's going through, and they think, oh, my gosh, this bird is trapped. And so they went up to the bird to help it out, trapped up in this net. And guess what happened? The bird's got the beak. The beak is basically like a sword, and the sword right through the eye and killed him. I'm sitting out there going, don't touch anything while we're out here. Now, some of you know exactly what I'm talking about right now, because how you help really matters. But I'm also trying to be honest with you. Even though Paul says, insofar as it's up to you, be at peace with everyone, you got no control on the way the other person is going to react, do you? You have none. You have control over your responsibility, your faithfulness, not their response to your faithfulness. Somebody might strike back, and you know why? Because they don't want to change. They like where they're at. They enjoy the trap. It's a possibility. But what we also see in Galatians 6:1 is this. You can only be delivered, especially if you're the one in the trap, you can only be delivered from something spiritual by someone that can help you spiritually. It's the only way out. And that's one reason to be a part of a vibrant and healthy church. Be a part of a vibrant and healthy church is to build relationships that helps you get free from your traps. And don't fool yourself, you've got them. Even if they're different than mine, you've got them. And here's why. Paul says, those that are spiritually mature are qualified to see more than you see. Those that are spiritually mature are qualified to see more than you see. After all, we all have blind spots and are called blind spots for a reason. You don't see them. And so maybe somebody on the outside looking at you says, you need to listen to me for your good and for your blessing. So you have to be careful, Paul's saying, about who you let diagnose you. Let's think about it like this. Let's imagine that you're terrible at math. Some of you are like, that's not hard to imagine. That's pretty easy, in fact. Let's imagine that you're terrible at math. You're not going to go to someone that's worse at math than you to help you out. Or if you do, everybody that is here is going to say, that's not the wisest move to make. You know, you wouldn't look at somebody and say, what'd you make on your test? I made a 42. What'd you make? I made a 26. I think we need to be study partners. No, you don't. No, you don't. You need somebody that's math wiser than you, history wiser than you. Seminary students, you need somebody Greek wiser than you. You get the idea. Be careful with who you let diagnose you, who you listen to. Are they spiritually mature? If not, Paul's like, put them aside. And the reason is because they can't see the solution, but that's not going to keep them from offering advice. Can't see the solution, but here's a lot of ideas for you. And all they're going to do is start burning the house down from the backside. It's not a help. Paul gives us this caution in 1 Corinthians 2:14. He says, but the person without the Spirit, they do not receive what comes from God's Spirit because it's foolishness to him. He's not able to understand it because it's evaluated spiritually. Here's basically what he's saying. Those without God's Spirit, they don't get it. They don't get it. They don't have the inside scoop. They don't have the source. That'd be like you being oblivious to math and not having a teacher that's there. Somebody that can actually guide you. It's not there. It's not present. You're never going to get it. Paul is insisting this. It's like a radio or a television or a microphone tuned to the wrong signal. They are literally incapable of receiving that message. And so when it comes to the job of restoration, the job of restoration with the church, my job, your job, our job, church, it's often neglected because we have the tendency either to pretend the sin never happened, and so let it go, or we don't want to be disruptive to a person's life, and so we let it go, or we tend to react too harshly toward the one who has sinned. And the balance between these two extremes can only be negotiated, Paul is saying, by someone that is spiritually mature. It should be normal to do what God says to do here. But the bottom line is, it isn't. This isn't something that the church is commonly known for. And it's all too easy, by the way, to respond to someone's problems and their trap with gossip. That's easy. So, question, who are the spiritual people? Entrust yourself to spiritual people. Well, who are they? I'm going to give you a couple of thoughts here. And I want to go back to the story of Abram so that you see the example. One, spiritual people have to be separated from the world to rescue a caught brother or sister. They got to be separated from it. I mean, you can't be in the trap and deliver them from the trap yourself. I mean, if Abram had lived in Sodom, he'd have had the same problem as Lot, wouldn't he? He'd have been caught. So you have to be separate from the world to rescue a brother or sister that is caught up in a trap. Here's the second thing. They got to be wise in how they rescue a fallen brother or sister. Wise in the way that they do it. For some people, they come with a sledgehammer no matter what. What I've found over the years is people that come with a sledgehammer, usually not interested in restoration. They're usually interested in you getting what they think you deserve. That wasn't Abram's approach. I'm encouraging you to take a different one. In Galatians 6:1, he says that you do it gently. You reboot gently. You restore gently, not in anger. I mean, Abram, by the way, he divided up his forces. He pulled off a surprise attack at night. That's pretty wise. He had a plan. But also, and this is third, wise people act on principle and not results to rescue a fallen friend. They act on principle and not results to rescue a fallen friend. Did you notice in Genesis 14:16, Abram, he brings Lot. He goes and he gets him. He brings him out. And what's Lot's response to his deliverance? He goes back to Sodom. He goes back. Now, some of you have a very similar experience to that. You have a family member that has a drug problem. and you did something. Maybe you even paid for them to go get rehabilitation, only a year later to find that they're worse than they were before they went to get rehabilitation. Ever been there before? You sit there and go, well, you know what? It wasn't worth it. I shouldn't have put the money into it. I should have put the time into it. I should have put the love into it. And you feel that way. People that are godly and wise, they act on principle, not results. You never had control over the results. So Abram, he looks at Lot. Lot didn't learn a thing. By the way, even in the story, no word of thanks from Lot. Man, thank you for the nighttime job that you did getting me out of there because I was caught up. Not a word of thanks or gratitude. He just moves back to Sodom and he continues his own destruction. There is that possibility. But we do this morning have to ask this question. What it is that motivates the spiritual person? What is it? What motivates them to help? I'm going to give you a couple things to think about. Here's one. It's got to be love. Got to be love. If you're really someone, you can't sit around and let them burn their life down. You can't do it. Passive, indifferent, that's not love. Love comes at a cost. There's a sacrifice involved. Here's the second thing. As you make your investment in the life of a person, you do know you don't know the future, right? How are they going to respond to the help that I give? I don't know. Some people, it might be like the bird, bang. I don't know. You know what? You don't either. But it doesn't absolve you from your responsibility to be actively at work to restore a brother or sister. And here's why, and it's the third, is because we're supposed to live by the golden rule. That's supposed to be a part of our MO here as a church. When you think about it, do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. That alone will move you into action if you're honest with the principle. But again, we have to do it with a spirit of gentleness, kindness, care, not compromising the truth, but showing that you care for the person. I'm going to be honest with you. Some Christians aren't interested in restoring a person. There's not. I'll give you an example. Some years ago, I remember a family coming in. They said, we're in a very difficult situation. And I said, well, what's going on? And they said, well, our teenage daughter is pregnant. I said, okay. And so as we sat there, we were trying to find a good way forward for them on how they handled the situation. You know, thank God these people weren't sitting there going, well, I think we're just going to have to abort the kid because they didn't go there at all. This kid didn't ask for this. They said, we're trying to find a good positive way to go forward. I said, well, then let's find a good positive way to go forward. And what we did as a church, because I was sitting there and I said, as you've met with your daughter, let me ask you this question. Are you seeing any semblance of her where she's self-righteous, self-justifying, she's pushing back? Is she sitting over there at the house and saying, you know, I didn't do anything wrong? And they're like, no, we don't see anything like that from her. I said, you know, because she's already sitting over there aware. She's already aware. So what you don't have to do is take the sledgehammer to her. We want her to see another side of the church. Not necessarily to condone what she's done, but to say, here we are, like Abram, and we're here to help. And we hope that by the help that we see, you see the love of Jesus through this church. And that's what we did. That is exactly what we did. And what it did for her was it got her into the church, committed to the church, because she experienced the love and the restoration of the church. We did it with a spirit of gentleness. Didn't mean we condoned anything, but there was always more to the story. And that was the goal. So the mending of a bone, the image that Paul gives, the mending of a bone, by the way, it might still hurt, but the hurt's got to be there to help, not just to hurt. The goal is the least amount of pain that is needed to help set it free and to set you free. Now, I've given this a couple of times this morning, and I've given you this word of caution. Have you ever seen in your experience when you're trying to help somebody out that they're taking advantage of you? Have you ever experienced that before? Because I know I have. I want to speak to that for a second because you know what? Paul actually anticipated that problem. And he says, well, let's talk about it because you do have a responsibility, but that doesn't mean that you have to do anything come what may just because somebody says to you that they want something from you. Doesn't mean that either because you see this in Galatians 6:5. He says, each one should carry their own load. Each one should carry their own load. Now, what does that mean? Well, one, because all of you figured out that somebody will try to use you. They borrow money. They drain your time. They think that basically you're there at every time that they call, text, whatever. You know what I'm saying? They don't have any boundaries there, and you do have more to your life, even though you are there to be godly and to be wise and helpful. Tony Evans said it like this. What you do is you share the burden. You don't take the load. You share the burden, you don't take the load. And that's what Paul's trying to say. Each one should carry their own load. It's your load. But the difference is somebody's there to help lift it, not to take it from you so that you don't have any responsibility with it. And you see this even in other places in Scripture. They have to show responsibility if they want your help. It isn't help come what may. In 2 Thessalonians 3:10, if anyone isn't willing to eat at work, you shouldn't eat. Now you got people that genuinely can't. That's different. We're talking those that are unwilling to do their part. What does Paul say? Don't. You see the checks and balances here? Got to carry the load, but the difference is somebody's there helping lift the weight. Some of the hardest decisions that we'll have to make in the process of restoration is that line that you draw between your when you're really helping someone, helping to restore someone, where a relationship has been broken and they're caught in the trap of the decisions that they've made, and enabling them to continue to make those same decisions. And church, you have no God-given responsibility to enable them to stay in a trap. You're trying to set them free, which is something that Jesus can do through his church and his people, not to enable them to stay in the trap. This is a powerful passage of Scripture, isn't it? And as I was thinking about it over the course of this week, I thought, man, what if the church actually did it? Here's my guess. This world would be a different place. This world would be a different place. We restore each other.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.